All right. Welcome to the Sunday night. There is a solution, newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. This meeting is being recorded, so you may visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Our speaker today is a compulsive overeater, a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions in the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After the share, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. Welcome, Cece, a compulsive overeater from Florida, I believe. Is that right?
Yeah, St. Pete, Florida.
Okay. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Hi, everybody. My name is Cece. I'm a compulsive overeater. And it's really awesome to be here. I love this meeting format. It's my first time on here, but this is so cool. I love what was just said about, service being the main reason why we're here. I mean, it's the reason why we're here. I had a sponsor tell me early in the beginning. I've been coming to OA for like 14 years. And I had a sponsor tell me in the beginning that, my job as a sponsor is just to take your hand and to put it in the hand of a higher power who can walk you into a better life. And your job is to do that for the next person that comes along, to reach back into the darkness and put that person's hand in the hand of a higher power that can walk them out of the darkness. And I just think it's so powerful, I've been coming to OA for 14 years. I'm recovered for today. There's nothing about this program that is one and done. And it's real good. It's real good that way because keeps me humble. I know what's waiting for me if I choose to turn my back on this way of life that I've learned in these rooms and through these steps. This is a great opportunity, to get in front of you today and relive the horrors with you all. And for those of you who are still living the horror today, I want you to know you're not alone. You're not alone. And it might be a really difficult part of your journey. The lowest parts of my journey, when it comes to my compulsive overeating, were actually after I found OA. Every relapse got worse, So if you're one of those people in the meeting today who it just seems to be getting worse, I just want to say don't give up the hope because the stuff really, really does work. Not all of our paths are linear. Mine certainly isn't. But I'm just gonna start by just suggesting how incredible it is that I didn't compulsively overeat today or yesterday or any of the days leading up to today for, at this point, almost 2 years. It's just my last relapse. I didn't think that this was gonna work. I didn't think that I would ever be able to stop. It felt like my life was just like rolling, tumbling down a hill, like getting worse and worse and worse, and I couldn't do anything to stop it, And that's where I was almost 2 years ago, about 19 months ago. I try to stay really, really humble in remembering that, and that's what's waiting for me around the corner, right? If I don't continue this one day at a time. So when I first came into OA, to be completely honest with you, I really only came into OA because I was afraid of losing a relationship. I would love to say that like I hit bottom and that like I, was having horrible, consequences or something like that, but like it wasn't like that. Like I came for the vanity, like you might hear people come for the vanity and stay for the sanity. That's really what brought me in. I thought that Because a lot of my life, and especially as a teenager, I was so actively consumed with my addiction to food and to dieting and to controlling my body, that relationships weren't possible, and I would have these fantasies about how all I needed was like a relationship, like someone to save me, for the perfect person to come along, and like, that was gonna fix everything, you know what I mean? And then I got into a partnership, and I was continuing to just be a complete and utter mess. And the night before, I finally admitted that I needed help. Like it wasn't just something that was going to go away, because my life circumstance changed and somehow magically it would go away. That night, I was making dinner with my partner, and we were missing like a couple of ingredients. And so I was like, I'll go to the grocery store. You guys probably know what I'm talking about. Oh, yes, I'll go all by myself to the grocery store and just get the ingredients that we need and nothing else. Which is a total lie. I went because I wanted to binge and I wanted to do it in private, So I didn't have a car at the time. So I'm like on my bike, biking to the grocery store. I get the ingredients, and then I like, furtively, like as if someone was watching me, you know what I mean? I like secretly get a bunch of things out of this cooler, these desserts out of this cooler, and put it in the shopping cart, and put it in my bag. I'm like eating stuff as I'm like biking, getting back to go give my partner the ingredients that were missing or whatever. And then, I'm like, oh, I don't feel good. I'm gonna go lay down. And I locked myself in my bedroom, right? Like this was like, I thought that this person was the answer to all of my problems. And I locked this person out of my bedroom and locked myself into the bedroom by myself. And binged my face off. Oh, and while I was like so furtively putting these in my shopping cart, I didn't realize that these dessert items were frozen. So I'm like having to gnaw them frozen. You know what I mean? Secretively in my room while my partner's knocking on the door, going, "Are you okay?" That's not normal. And so that's really what that was like the one of the bottoms, right? That got me to start going to meetings. And I just want to say for a second, like the importance of representation, because I first found OA. I live in St. Pete, Florida right now. But at the time I lived in South Florida, and I did one when I was like 19 or 20. I Googled, "I can't stop eating," because my compulsive overeating, like it happened in cycles. I would have these, like in the beginning, it did. Towards the end, it was like every single day. But in the beginning, I would have like, cycles of like days where I would eat. I would just binge and hide in my room, and I would just binge and eat all of this food. Sometimes I would stay up all night. Like I wouldn't sleep at all. I would just stay up eating tea, watching TV, and just eating copious amounts of food. And I remember one night I Googled, "I can't stop eating." And OA came up, and I went to a meeting the next morning. It was at 7 a.m. I'll never forget. I don't know where. There are 7 a.m. meetings anymore in person, but at that time there was one. But I went, but it was just, all these women who were my grandmother's age. It was like 10 grandmothers sitting around a table at a church. And I was a angry atheist. I wasn't just atheist, I was an angry atheist. I had been so hurt, by the religion that I grew up in. I was like, this is not for me, but that night that I had that experience where I locked myself in my room and I almost broke my teeth on frozen desserts, with my partner in the other room, I had one friend who was my age and who I identified with, and she had told me that she went to meetings a few weeks prior, because I was like, oh yeah, I used to have bulimia, you know what I mean? She was like, "Oh yeah, I go to this group." So, anyways, just want to say that that one person, and I today, like I try to be as open as I can about, like, yeah, I'm in recovery for an eating disorder. You know, I mean, I try to tell as many people as I can. I tell my colleagues know I'm in recovery. A lot of the people, significant or insignificant in my life, I just moved recently and I'm living with a woman who I barely know. And I'm like, by the way, you know, I'm in recovery from an eating disorder. And like, everyone should know. Everyone should know. Everyone who's in my life to a certain extent for me should know. This is just for me, but anyways, just that representation, you know, that person is not in my life anymore, but I will always, always remember her, and she will always be a significant person in my life just because she told me she goes to these meetings, you know? So that's really why I went to those meetings, is that person, you know? And you know, it probably was another 7 years before I met another person my age in the rooms, to be honest. Like, you know, this was in the days before Zoom and all that stuff. So yeah, but I started going to meetings, and it was really amazing to me to hear other people share so openly about what was like my biggest, darkest secret. Like, I remember just like reading. There used to be this thing called the Lifeline. It's not around anymore, but like, it was basically like a magazine where people could write, you know, like just little snippets about different aspects of like recovery and their experiences in recovery and working the steps and all that. And there was a book called A Lifeline Sampler that had like, you know, tons. I mean, it was a huge book. It was like this thick, hundreds of pages of just people talking about their compulsive overeating. And I would literally be like reading with my jaw dropped, like, oh, I do that. Oh my God, I do that too. And you know, I mean, I knew about anorexia and I knew about bulimia, but I didn't think that like binge eating was like a disorder. Like, I just thought I was just a gross person, you know? So to start to see it through the lens of like, no, this is like a for real disorder, like a disease. Like, you know, it's not, you're not just like a gross person with no willpower. Like, that was huge for me. And to hear that there were steps that I could take to get better, to stop doing that, to live a better life. That was huge for me. Like, you know, I mean, really, hope is my dope. You know what I mean? It was then and it is now, right? Because yeah, like I definitely have struggled a lot with depression. Certainly before I came into program, but even since coming into program, you know, I really, really need that principle behind step two, operating in my life on a daily basis. Like, anyways, and I get that from this fellowship, from the literature and from the people. And so going to meetings was something that I really I did in the beginning, you know. There wasn't so much of an emphasis on like working the steps, which sounds kind of like silly when you think about it, because that's like the only thing that connects us are the steps. Like, that's the only requirement for OA meetings, is like you have to read and follow the steps. And yet there's definitely tons of groups out there that don't talk much about working the steps. But anyways, it is what it is. I'm here today. So in the beginning, I didn't really have much of a focus on working the steps. And as a result, I struggled a lot, you know. I mean, I don't think I really got abstinent for a year. Like, I would have times when I would like, you know, have normal eating, you know what I mean? But for periods of time, but I wasn't really like sober and I wasn't really changing my life. You know what I mean? Like, there weren't like concrete steps that I was taking to create a different kind of way of living. I was a thief. I had no remorse. I had no regret. I was so cut off from my sense of humanity, like that you know, I didn't think that the things that I did that were wrong really actually hurt anybody, because I was so isolated and I felt so less than, you know, inferior. So yeah, I stole a lot. I lied constantly. I had a vague sense that what I was doing was not the best, you know, but I felt very justified, you know, in my thinking, you know, look at all the terrible things that all those people out there are doing, you know, like I just steal it from grocery stores or from department stores, you know what I mean? Or like, you know, from my parents, you know. Like it just in my mind, like everything was totally justified, and as was my eating, you know, as was my eating was totally justified. And I really didn't see the connection between the way that I was living and how miserable I felt all the time and how horrible I felt. Have you guys ever bought a piece of fruit or like a vegetable and like it looks really like nice on the outside? It's like a nice green apple, and you like buy it, and you bring it home, and then you cut it in half, and it's totally like rotten on the inside. That's me. Like, that's how I felt about myself. Like, I could clean up really nice on the outside and look really, really good, but at my core, I felt like I was rotten. Like, I was just totally and utterly rotten. You know, I eventually found a sponsor who eagerly and consistently focused on working the steps. And this was really when my life started to change. She and I would talk every single night at the same exact time. It was 9:30 p.m. and we would read a book, or we would read the big book. She would have me read like 1 to 2 pages and write a little bit about my reaction to those pages, and then we would discuss it the next day. And we worked together this way for, I want to say, like 13 or 14 months. And I worked, you know, and I worked and I got through all 12 steps, you know, working with her, you know, just in that way. Like, really, I mean, we just did it. You know, it was just really straightforward the way that we worked the steps together. And I, in the process, you know, got abstinent, identified those foods that I could not start eating and have any degree of certainty if or when I would be able to stop. Those were the foods that I had to put down. I didn't really have an understanding of the physical allergy, I will say, at that time. And so, I was still like, there were certain foods that were creating the phenomenon of craving that I was still playing around with. Yeah, I mean, but I still had a degree of freedom. I had an understanding of, you know, how my mental well-being and the new life that I was living was totally dependent on my willingness to ask for guidance and help from a higher power. And I enjoyed, I mean, great. I've had periods of fantastic recovery in this program. just like total freedom, like really feeling like I'm a channel of my higher power, you know, being of service, like doing the deal. Unfortunately, I've not been able to maintain that steadily, you know. It's been a lot of I don't know, addict thinking and behavior interfering with my the new lifestyle that I have enjoyed, it as a recovered woman, you know. Some of the things I've put before my recovery, which as a result I've lost everything, are relationships. I put relationships before my higher power, my relationship with my higher power, and lost everything. I put my career and my career ambitions, my work ambitions ahead of my program and my working the 12 steps consistently on a daily basis. I've put my image before my recovery. I made the mistake, which I pray I never do again, but start thinking that just being abstinent and going to the gym was a sign that I was recovered. It's not. And in fact, I think for me, like focusing on the food and the exercise so much actually was a huge barrier to my spiritual growth at the time. And I lost everything. What else? I mean, what else is there? I don't know. Oh, my spirituality. I found a spiritual practice like through a religious group, and I started prioritizing that over the very basics of what I've learned to do in these rooms and through the 12-step program. And as a result, I lost everything. So it's very humbling to like admit that, you know. Every time that I've like gotten to that point, It's like this the downward slope is steeper. Like I go down quicker and it's more painful and it's harder to get back up every time I go out again. I've had to seek outside help, a lot of outside help. And these are all like outside issues, right? But I've had to really like I just really had to lose a lot, and in order to really understand how badly I need to surrender to the principles that are in these steps on a daily basis. Yeah, I was reading in the 12 and 12 for OA. It's actually really, I just want to read this one part at the beginning because it is so true about my experience. It says, step 12 begins with the acknowledgement of a great truth. We who have worked the first 11 steps of the Overeaters Anonymous program have had a spiritual awakening, and we now have a message of hope to carry to other compulsive overeaters. We who once suffered from complete powerlessness to control our eating and our lives have now discovered the saving strength of a power greater than ourselves. We have experienced the miracle of physical, emotional, and spiritual healing, just as we were promised when we began working these steps. So I want to talk a little bit, I don't know how much time I have left, but I just want to talk for a little bit about this power. I like to pray before I speak, less of me and more of thee. because that's, I mean, if I had to sum up one thing about living in recovery, that is really like that is the one guiding principle, is like I'm seeking more and more and more of the higher power and less and less and less of myself. I've struggled a lot with the concept of a higher power over the years in program. Like I said, I was like I was a very angry atheist. I had a lot of anger about the experiences that I had in the religion that I was brought up in. And so I am so incredibly grateful that we have the tradition in place through the founders of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and it trickles down into all the fellowships, that no one gets to define this power. No one gets to define this power for me. I needed to be able to discover a power on my own. I don't know, like I'm just a control freak or what, but like if you told me who my higher power was, I immediately like shut down. Like I really did. And that first woman that sponsored me, where we really started to focus on the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, she was an evangelical Christian. And I knew this because she went on missions in Jamaica, and she fought. She had three adopted children that she adopted through this like Christian program. So I knew like this woman was serious about, you know, her concept of God, and like her whole life revolved around it. And she never once proselytized to me, like never once. She encouraged me from day one to discover on my own. And I had all kinds of words for my higher power, you know, goddess, great spirit, HP, higher power, you know. I had a friend who prayed to Godzilla, and I adopted that for a while because they didn't like God, so they prayed to Godzilla, and I adopted that for a while. So like, yeah, like I don't know, there was something specifically about like this person in particular who I knew was very serious about evangelical work, that there was an absence of any kind of like manipulation or control of my concept of a higher power. That was just like so healing to me. I'm so grateful for that woman in my life, you know. And it's I just I yeah I really needed that. So I spent a lot of years just basically just meditating, you know, because I didn't really have any faith in anything that was taught to me or told to me. But through the power of like meditation, I had these experiences. I remember I had a friend in program who I was like, well, I don't have a God and I'm not going to pray or whatever. And she's like, and I wouldn't even like meditate because I was like, meditation, that's really just a word for prayer. That's just a code word for prayer. And she's like, Cece, why don't you just like close your eyes and shut up for a little while? And that's where I started. It was like I just closed my eyes and I shut up for a while. And I started having experiences, you know, I started having these kind of like visions. And you know, this actually was my first vision. This tattoo that I got was my first, and this was my first concept of a higher power, was like a falcon. And I called her Great Mother. And like I prayed to that for like 3 years, you know what I mean? 2 or 3 years. So, anyways, that's not the only manifestation of my higher power that I recognize and acknowledge today. But I just wanted to say, you know, I don't know where everyone's at with this, you know, programming. Obviously, we're all at different places. But really, I try to continue to like have that same sense of like openness and wonder about my higher power on a daily basis. You know what I mean? There's this strong sense in me that my higher power can literally speak through anyone and anything at any time. And I forget sometimes, and I get like I'll come to meetings and I'll find myself kind of like judging or like picking and choosing who I'm gonna listen to in a meeting because like that person doesn't get it, you know what I mean? Or like, oh my God, like that person, whatever, you know.
5 minutes,
But
see.
thank you so much. But like, I have this really, really strong sense that my higher power can and will work through literally anything. Anything, any person, any being, any experience. And I wanted to say, including all my relapses, including all my relapses, I really believe that that has been a part of my spiritual growth and development. I think that it's been a necessary part of my growth and development. Every time, right? And my abstinence is imperfect. takes courage to admit that, but my abstinence is imperfect, guys. Every time I start thinking like it's right or wrong, any experience that I have, I am putting boundaries around my higher power. I'm putting a fence around what my higher power is or isn't. And so I just this is just what works for me. And I think, you know, I feel like I want to share it because like even like the big book, you know what I mean? Like when I read the steps today, when I study the steps, when I work the steps, when I'm working with a sponsee, man, just having that sense of open-mindedness and a willingness to like really listen and see things through a new perspective. It's just so important for me because, oh, one of the other things that took me out in the past and led to another relapse where I lost everything was thinking that I've got this shit figured out. thinking that I got my higher power figured out. I've got the formula down. and I know, like, I know, no. And I don't. And I just don't like, I can't afford to have that mentality in my life anymore. My higher power is always teaching me, always stretching me, always there for me, always comforting me, all those things, you know. And it's really just a matter of on a daily basis, you know, continuing to open up to that, be willing to listen, be willing to hear, be flexible. My program of recovery has to be made of rubber, not glass. I heard that in a meeting once, and like, you know, because if I drop it, I can't afford for it to shatter and break and not have it anymore. You know what I mean? So, my program of recovery has to be made of rubber. It has to be tough. It has to be durable, and it has to be flexible, because it has to go where I go, and it has to be able to be with me through, you know, all of life's ups and downs. So kind of all over the place here. I've really deep in my heart feel connected with all of you here tonight, wherever you're at in your journey of recovery. I pray that you find the peace and the sense of comfort, that sense of ease and comfort that I feel today with my higher power. And I'll never be able to give back what I've been given in this program ever. I don't, you know, I could dedicate my whole freaking life to it and it still wouldn't be enough. I owe my whole life, you know, to this program and to these steps and everything I've gotten from it. So with that, I pass. I look forward to hearing everyone's share.
Thank you, Cece, for your experience, strength, and hope. It was a real honest share. Thank you so much.